I'll call the House Education Finance Committee to order. Good morning, everybody. It's so nice to see the Capitol alive with music in the rotunda that may or may not hear us be serenaded during committee. I also would like to introduce and welcome the Groves Academy students in St. Louis Park. And it's one of my, I represent part of St. Louis Park, but now your school's in Representative Kraft's district. But I've toured your amazing school, and thank you for being here today. And then next up, we will have our minutes. There's a technical correction with a comma there that we know about. But other than that, are there any, let's see, Representative Fire, or Representative Hill, would you like to move the minutes? Just like looking down the row here.
I've had a chance to take a look, and yeah, I move their adoption.
Representative Hill moves the adoption of February 1st minutes. Any other questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have a bill up that's come to us from the early Children's and Families. I've got to get the committees straight here. Children's and Families Committee. And I would like to welcome Representative Perez Vega to your committee. And would you like to move your bill in front of your committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Perez Vega moves House File 456 before the committee today. The intention is to move it out, move it over to Ways and Means. The primary jurisdiction for this bill for policy has been in the Children and Family Committee, and they did their work. We're here to look at the fiscal aspect, and Representative Perez Vega moves House File 456 before the committee, and I believe you have an amendment. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, amendment is, Madam Chair, is to plug in the appropriation for the updated fiscal note that you see in your folders.
Wonderful. So we have the A1 amendment before us. So the A1 amendment before us, does anybody else have any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment's adopted, and the bill's in the shape the author would like. Representative Perez Vega, go ahead and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Maria Isa Perez Vega, and I represent District 65B, which covers the capital city of St. Paul, School District 625, and the city of West St. Paul, School District 197. And I'm presenting HF 456 relating to making a permanent expansion of voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus programs, summing it all together as permanent funding towards preschool for children ranging the ages of 3 to 5 years old. As a mother to a soon-to-be 4-year-old this upcoming April, I can express to you directly the importance of ensuring our young children are prepared for their first day of kindergarten. Research shows that the investments in early childhood pay dividends in the long-term setting our children for great success in every area of life. Our children in Minnesota, more than ever, deserve quality care and the great benefits of preschool education. In the aftermath of a global shutdown in which most infant to toddler kids, like my daughter, Loisa, were limited the ability to interact with other children their age until most recently. There is a great need across the state for pre-K, and it will be a great asset of preparation towards advancing a positive emotional, verbal, and physical environment that will welcome and bring comfort to the future pupils of our educational institution student population. We need to ensure our students are ready for kindergarten, which is a gap-closing strategy for our young students of color and Indigenous students. Pre-kindergarten helps the adjustments and developmental drive for our children to thrive in an educational setting. It opens the opportunity for children to spend a great amount of time with other kids their age and develops interaction skills with adults and teachers outside of their home building, an environment of how to make friendships, communication, and cooperative conversational listening skills. Preschool, pre-K, allows our children to participate in new activities with peers and build skills on how to express certain emotional frustrations and challenges before kindergarten. Studies have shown The variety of activities of a preschool education provides, helps construct children's language and literacy skills, physical and movement development, communication, math, science, and approaches to learning the arts and music to express themselves, something I know well of. Learning the alphabet, sounds, reading aloud, along with creative hands-on crafts, story time, and projects boosting the child's skill to build goals and express their imagination. A, B, C, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. Preschool age is a majority of 3- and 4-year-olds who are in the phase of developing independent thinking skills while establishing practices of taking responsibilities and putting back their toys, and helping other peers with opportunities to help set up activities, developing leadership, and opening diverse horizons and promoting language skills with introductions to new vocabulary and capacity to ask questions, along with building skills with opportunities to simply receive and engage in observing the community around them. It is known for pre-kindergarten to provide our children with communication skills and foundational skills in math and literacy. Our Minnesota pre-kids deserve high-quality education to support their imagination and cooperative development with the skills and opportunities to enter on a prepared readiness for their kindergarten class. There are simply not enough pre-K opportunities for our Minnesota families to choose from, and this would allow consistency in ensuring funding is available for current and prospective pre-K programs. I recently enrolled my daughter for the upcoming 2023 fall semester at Riverview Elementary on the west side of St. Paul in District 65B in our St. Paul Public School District. I was excited to hear from pre-K educators and how inspirational it is to witness the growth of their pre-K students advance onto kindergarten and beyond, seeing them return into the schools as graduates and off to going to college to become teachers themselves. It is without a doubt that pre-K is an important introduction and benefit introducing our children onto their educational journeys. I ask for members of this committee to support our children and the state's opportunity to ensure preschool remain with permanent funding in order to continue to serve our Minnesota children's opportunities to thrive and allow a comfortable invitation to the beginning of their educational dreams. Muchas gracias for hearing out why I believe all should be in support of HF 456.
Thank you, Representative. Next up, we'll have your testifiers, if that's okay. We have Dr. Lori Erickson up first, and then Judith Kerrigan-Crodell. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name for the record, and proceed.
I'm Judith Kerrigan-Crodell, pre-K educator at St. Paul Schools. Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives. Thank you for considering this important bill. St. Paul's Schools to support, making the VPK funding permanent. My name is Judith Kerrigan-Crodell, and I am a proud kindergarten teacher at Maxfield Elementary in St. Paul. I have been teaching for over 30 years in both early childhood family education and the pre-K kindergarten program. Maxfield is one of St. Paul's school sites that is funded through voluntary pre-K. To date, Maxfield serves pre-K 5 children and families in the heart of the Rundle community in St. Paul. Maxfield's free and reduced lunch rate, homelessness, and high mobility are among the highest in our district. As a pre-K kindergarten teacher, I see firsthand the impact of school-based early childhood programming. Students in our full-day, five-day-per-week classroom are able to experience a play-based, socially, emotionally supportive setting that allows them all to thrive. Our students learn foundational social-emotional skills, such as sharing, taking turns, and cooperation. The language-rich environment allows students to learn through many areas of study. These promote learning in student interest areas, such as the environment, seasons, animals, families, and our communities. Everyday students in our classroom know that they are important, and we respect and validate their authentic selves. The rich diversity and heritages are an asset to the Maxfield community. We often deal with the disease of homelessness. Our school and classroom offers a safe space for our pre-K children to build relationships and lifelong skills. We encourage them to share their emotions, dreams, and their hopes. We all know that we would never build a home on an unstable piece of land. Pre-K offers each child a unique and much-needed opportunity to have a solid start to their important educational foundation. To further support this, we offer home visits to our families. This is an important component of our school. Teachers are able to work alongside families to offer the best partnership possible for their children. As a teacher, I see firsthand the magnificent impact pre-K has on children. Children arrive in fall, and often our classroom is their first collaborative learning experience. By spring, children have developed into experts in their own important stories of life through their writing, art, math, and science exposure that may have not been offered to them through no fault of their own. I strongly urge you to move forward with investing in voluntary pre-K funding. I know St. Paul's children, families, and educators will be forever grateful to you. I truly appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. Next up, Dr. Lori Erickson, please state your name for the record, and then we will have Stephanie Youngberg. And if testifiers can keep their comments a little bit shorter, we have a few more bills to get through. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lori Erickson. I'm the Assistant Director of the Office of Early Learning in the St. Paul Schools. And I'm beaming because I'm sitting next to a potential St. Paul Public School parent and a St. Paul Public School teacher. It is a very proud moment to be in front of you today. So with that said, as I prepared for this testimony, I did take some time to review program history. And it was not that long ago that we served 100 students in a half-day setting. We pieced together funding such as community kindergarten, Project Early Reading, Project Early K, Community Kindergarten, Early Reading First, and local referendum dollars. The St. Paul Public Schools pre-kindergarten programming showed immediate positive results for children, specifically those children who qualified for free or reduced lunch and children of color. Our students routinely met the literacy, math, and social-emotional benchmark targets, thereby sending them off to that big pond of kindergarten ready to go. Due to this, the St. Paul Public Schools has continued to invest in early childhood. To date, we have over 1,400 full-day pre-kindergarten seats. That's incredible, incredible. Of which, 261 are funded through voluntary pre-K. The bill being discussed today will allow districts such as St. Paul to continue offering programming that we know closes achievement gaps. Offering a robust, play-based curriculum alongside of skilled educators such as Ms. Kerrigan Crodell, children and families are welcomed into an environment that paves the way for long-term achievement. As the legislature considers building out a multi-tiered early education system, it is really critical to note that there are 600 children living in the city of St. Paul that are on our wait list. Every day, I am asked, principals are calling me asking for more pre-kindergarten classrooms in their schools. We know investments in early learning work. Families want it. Children thrive in it. Teachers and principals will build it. We know that if you fund it, we can open up those seats and move children off of our wait list and welcome them into vibrant classrooms. I urge you to consider funding voluntary pre-K. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your work in St. Paul. Next up, we have Stephanie Youngberg, then Jason Sellers, and then Rachel Johnson. Please settle in, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Stephanie Youngberg, and I am the superintendent of East Central Public Schools. I'm honored to be here today to illustrate how important and impactful BPK has been for our youngest learners and their families. The East Central District is about 750 square miles, and we have about 725 students enrolled. We are located in northern Pine County and have 55% of our students receiving free and reduced lunch. We average about, over the last 4 years, we've averaged 43 students in our BPK programs. BPK has allowed our early childhood program to offer full-day preschool 4 days a week. By offering this free program to our families, we are able to provide children and their families with affordable, accessible early learning experiences that will build a solid foundation for learning. When our children are able to come to school for 4 full days a week, we are preparing their bodies and their minds for the learning that will come in kindergarten and for the rest of their educational journey. Through the VPK program, students have access to transportation to and from school and receive free breakfast. Students also have access to lunch during the school day, which ensures that our children have full bellies. When they are hungry, children are not able to focus on academics. Our free and reduced lunch families are benefiting not only from quality education experiences for their children, but their children are getting nutritious meals each day that they are in school. One area that might seem like a small benefit to our preschoolers' day is the ability to learn and grow in our outdoor learning spaces. Research has shown that by providing outdoor play, our children are able to be physically active, which encourages a healthy lifestyle, play with others socially, and collaborate together, be in touch with nature, and understand the world around them. Learning even occurs while dressing for outside time, especially during our crazy Minnesota winters. By dressing to go outside, children are learning self-care skills and practicing their fine motor skills. This is time well spent. Parents of our preschool children take their education very seriously. Our preschool classes have great attendance throughout the entire school year, and children are consistently in school. By instilling an understanding that consistent attendance is important for our littles, parents are getting their families set in positive routines right from the start. When our children are at school, they are able to receive mental health services from co-located licensed mental health providers in our building. Many of our students also benefit from these services because of attending VPK. For many families, time away from work or transportation hurdles would prevent this if they did not have VPK. Our families and littles also have access to county services within our school community, allowing easier access to dental services, county mental health, and a proactive instead of reactive relationship with child protection services. Our preschool program is also a great opportunity for providing intensive intervention services for our young learners who may have special needs. Often children with special needs only go to preschool programs for a few hours per week. Our students are able to come to school more often, therefore receiving more services from speech and language, deaf and hard of hearing, and other special education teachers. These children are also able to be part of the larger preschool community, increasing their social skills and experiences with children their own age. By providing these additional services, we are seeing early intervention is working, and children are phasing out of special education programs and fully integrating with their regular education peers. The successful learner equation of ready families, ready schools, plus ready communities, and ready state and ready systems really does equal successful learners. It is not the responsibility of the child to be ready for school. It is the responsibility of the adults, of the schools and programs, of our communities, and of our state to provide the appropriate opportunities for our students to be ready. By providing preschool for our children, we are setting our students up for success, ensuring that they are prepared for kindergarten and have long-lasting social, emotional, and academic success. It is important that the funding is predictable, stable, and available for Minnesota's youngest learners. Thank you for your time and the work you do for Minnesota children.
Thank you so much. Next up, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair. You're welcome. Representative Perez Vega, my name is Jason Sellers. I'm the Director of Community Education for Burnsville Egan Savage Public Schools, ISD 191. I don't want to repeat a lot of what was already shared with this committee, but I will add a few pieces to this. We are the fourth largest pre-K program in the state. We have 325 seats that are allocated to us in this most recent year. We think it's fair to ask, what impact does VPK funding actually have on the ground with students, and what are the results from those students? In our school district, not only do we provide kindergarten assessments for every single student, but we also provide the e-reading component of FastBridge testing. Last year, we tested over 601 students entering kindergarten. Of those 601 students entering kindergarten, the students that attended our VPK programming provided through funds allocated from the state of Minnesota, over 80% of those students who attended our programming, which you allocated funds for, were met or partially met standards going into kindergarten. I'm going to repeat that. Over 80% met or partially met. This is in contrast with students in our school district who did not attend school district VPK programs, and about 60% of those kids met or partially met standards. The gap is 20%. It's pretty big. One of the pieces that I would like to share with the committee is that along with making permanent funding for voluntary pre-kindergarten as a must, we certainly, as a school district and as a Minnesota Community Education Association, we definitely are in favor of Governor Walz's and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's recommendations to increase funding to benefit children for social, emotional, and mental health supports. We have seen with the 325 students, when they are in voluntary pre-K, they have access to other district programs, to other district staff that can support them in ways that they very much need, including food, mental health services, social, emotional, and other behavioral needs that students have. In conclusion, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be here, and our school district and our association very much appreciate your advocacy for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Rachel Johnson and then Kimberly Antonson. You're both remote, so we'll go to Rachel. Will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for inviting me to speak today. My name is Rachel Johnson, and I have worked as an elementary school teacher for the last 9 years, mainly in kindergarten. I will definitely be brief because I've left my principal in my classroom with a Groundhog's Day craft, so I'm sure he wants to do it. As a kindergarten and first grade teacher, I definitely understand the impact on the first 5 years of a child's life in regard to early environmental experiences. The skills developed in early childhood help children make sense of the world and prepare them confidently to try new challenges. But the reality is that children are not given equitable access to the same high quality experiences. As a teacher, I feel a great deal of pressure to help children be successful in school. However, the range of learning disparities amongst children is quite wide. I'm advocating for widely available voluntary pre-kindergarten because I know that it will impact the children's educational trajectory. It makes a difference in the ability to be ready to learn when they arrive in kindergarten. It is critical that we recognize the huge impact of these early environmental experiences, school readiness skills, play, social emotional wellness. Childhood is such a unique time in every person's life, and each stage requires a unique set of skills. By continuing to improve the care available to children at their earliest ages, Minnesota can value the right of each child to have a safe, engaging, challenging, and stimulating environment. I applaud the legislator for working to make these spots permanent, so communities around the state can count on these programs being there each year. And of course, thank you, Representative Perez Vega, for championing the needs of our youngest learners.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have also remote Kimberly Antonson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
All right, hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, perfect. Good morning. My name is Kimberly Antonson. I am a preschool teacher in Ogama, Minnesota. We are in the Wabanogama-Wider School District, and we have about 650 kids district-wide. Thank you for letting me join you today from my classroom. As you can see behind me, the kids are being so quiet. I may have bribed them. But this classroom right here shows you exactly what VPK funds are providing for the children of Minnesota. We were one of the first programs to receive the funds back in 2017, and it has done so much for our Kickstart program. We were already running two full-time classrooms, but with the extra funding, we were able to add a third classroom, and more importantly, more kids. Each classroom has a max of 16 kids with a full-time licensed teacher and para, along with extra support staff as needed. The best part of all of this is that we are able to offer this wonderful programming free of charge to all our families. I love my job, especially when kindergarten teachers tell us they can tell the difference between the kids who were in Kickstart and those who had no preschool experience at all. They tell us that the Kickstart kids have higher functioning skills. They know about the school environment. They know the school expectations, as well as being ready for the more rigorous academics of kindergarten life. When they leave us and go on to kindergarten, they already feel like a part of the school and have that pride of being a Thunderbird. My son was able to come to preschool here in Ogama when he was four, So as a parent, it was a relief giving him such a valuable educational experience for free. All children in Minnesota should have this opportunity. I am also a school board member in the Frazee-Vergus School District. I have worked with the early childhood director there for many years, trying to help them get a piece of the VPK funding. If they were awarded funds, they would be able to increase classes and offer programming similar to Ogama's. This bill does the important work of safeguarding the seats that are already available, but every district in Minnesota should be able to offer programming like this. More importantly, parents should not have to worry if they can afford such a wonderful experience for their child. Thank you for working on championing this program, Representative Perez Vega. Thank you all for allowing me time today. And if any of you would like to see your VPK funds at work, I invite you to Ogama for a visit. Thank you.
Thank you so much for opening your classroom to us. That's a great way to end testimony, members. The public was given opportunity to sign up for testify in House File 456, and we had one person sign up to testify. Sorry about that. Shane Morris from MDE, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, members. Shana Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at MDE. So I'm here to testify in support of this bill, and we'll speak from an education perspective. We know that setting our students up for success starts early. We know that the early years are critical to setting a child up for more positive educational, social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes later. Evaluations of early childhood programs have demonstrated improved high school graduation rates and college attendance rates, and it's been indicated that children participating in these programs have higher earnings, less involvement with the public safety system, and better overall health into adulthood. Worth noting, too, a study from 2018 indicated that state-funded pre-kindergarten programs is significantly improved literacy competencies, which I know has been a topic this year. The purpose of our VPK and SRV programs is to achieve exactly these outcomes. Programs prepare children for success as they enter kindergarten, support their transition to that K-12 system, and set them on this positive educational trajectory. And with all due respect, we should not be in maintenance mode when it comes to high-quality pre-kindergarten access levels or having the conversation about trying to avoid more than a 50% reduction in access. We should really be talking about how to expand access. And ensuring these 4,000 seats are not lost is the first step in ensuring that we can expand that access, and in the administration's proposal to expand pre-kindergarten opportunities through a mixed delivery pre-kindergarten model that provides families access through school districts, through licensed childcare, and Head Start. And that proposal is expected to serve 25,000 four-year-olds by fiscal year 2027. We also know that districts want to, as you've heard, want to and have the capacity to provide this programming. Demand for seats has been almost double what's been funded in fiscal year 2023. 6,915 seats were requested and that were not able to be funded. And those are with districts already knowing the caps in place and highly unlikely that they may get additional seats. So in addition to feedback suggesting the expansion to serve more children, feedback from districts has also been that they would like more predictability for finalizing local decisions about staff and facilities. This bill would help them to do that. Understandably, regularly wondering if 4,000 seats will be renewed hinders their ability to plan and, in turn, a family's ability to predict access. So ensuring that our youngest learners do not lose access to high-quality, free pre-kindergarten opportunities by maintaining these 4,000 seats that would have otherwise been eliminated, is the least we can do in this phase of early learning. And so with that, I appreciate the opportunity to provide comments today.
Thank you so much. With that, members, are there questions or comments? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have to emphasize how important this is. It's proven. We've got the data. Without a doubt, these are successful programs. The only problem is that we keep them on a temporary status. So that's the thing that we can fix now, and then we know that we're on the right trajectory for some of our youngest learners in Minnesota. So thanks for the bill and all the testifiers today. And it was kind of hard to watch the preschool class and focus on what that great teacher was saying, because there were some cute kids in the background. But I did my best, and I know that it was just reinforcing the importance of this message. And so thanks to everybody for you know, being here and being an advocate and being so effective in that.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to look this direction so people can hear me. So on the advice of the chair, I'm going to talk into the microphone. But it feels weird to look this way and people are behind me. But, yeah, I'm going to just talk to this column here. Thank you, Representative. Thank you to the testifiers. Obviously, early intervention is critical and critical to the success of our kids and our society long term. I really want to thank Mr. Sellers from Burnsville, Eagan Apple Valley, and sharing that tangible data and growth. When we invest in programs, we should have that tangible data and growth. And so thank you for that. My question is in regards to, does this bill, Representative Perez Vega, does it address the disparities found in the per pupil revenue between greater Minnesota and urban districts that are currently found within the funding formula? So does it address that, the revenue disparities?
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's no disparities that I'm aware of, and unless we have our superintendent, who is from greater Minnesota, just stated that all of their seats are funded and that this would affect those fundings of those seats. Madam Chair, if Ms. Mack would like to address.
Representative Ms. Mack, I also want to point to folks, there's a run in your packets about which districts get money. This follows the needs of the students, so Ms. Mack, maybe let us know about the conversations you had on this topic in early childhood and children and families.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to pass it to Mr. Strom, if that's okay.
No worries, Mr. Strom. He's back. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. There is a printout, as the chair said, in your packets. I think the issue about revenue disparity keys off of how the count works. And for the VPK count, that goes into the regular pupil count of the district. So if there are differences in funding levels among districts, those would show up in the funding levels for the VPK program. The primary cause of those differences is either sparsity revenue for the rural geographically isolated districts or compensatory revenue for the metro districts that have large and the greater Minnesota districts that have large concentrations of students of poverty. So if you look at the printout in the second to last column, the total revenue per ADM, you'll see that variation across districts because there is a differential level of funding depending on the district's other funding. As I said, though, the biggest reasons are either sparsity or the compensatory differences by site. And the compensatory differences by site, it's probably helpful, and Ms. Mock can go into details about this, but the way the seats are allocated is on the basis of free and reduced lunch counts in each district. So it's in each of the four regions, rather. So the state's divided into four regions for the program, and the schools are simply ordered, each site is ordered by its percent free and reduced lunch. So you're getting relatively tight clustering for most of the districts because of that. But you can see as you look up and down that list, there are variations. And some of that variation that shows up on the printout, this is perhaps a little too technical for the general purpose of your conversation, but some of that variation is due to the fact that some schools don't go quite the full amount of funding available. So the ADM count, because they might have a half-day program, and the maximum is 0.6 on the pupil funding. So that plays into the denominator a bit when we look at per pupil amounts. Madam Chair, I hope that wasn't too long of an answer. It's a pretty complicated answer, and I didn't want to get us too far off track.
No, Mrs. Strom, we always appreciate your answers. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. There is a significant disparity in the pupil formula between Greater Minnesota and the Metro. That is a fact. We've talked about that. In fact, yesterday we got an email from a teacher from a metro district that was advocating for us to address this disparity. So I just thank you for your candor, Representative Perez Vega, but this bill does not address the disparity. It will only heighten the disparity. I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding that correctly. And Mr. Strom, can you correct me if I'm wrong on that?
It won't heighten anything.
Madam Chair, Representative Bigberg, yes, this program is funded just as all other pupils in the district are. And those characteristics about how they're funded are, of course, in the domain of this committee. So, but it's the same for other, whether it's a first grade student or a pre-kindergarten student, it's the same. So those distributions, like I say, the thing that's a little different about this is because the four regions, the Greater Minnesota is in a region for this, it starts at the top of the list. So the distribution tends to be when one looks at poverty measures by school districts, a number of the Greater Minnesota lists are districts are at the top of that list because of some very low income communities. So really where you see the biggest difference is the suburban and exurban areas, and then across Greater Minnesota, very different from district to district depending on the characteristics of the families that live in those districts.
Thank you.
Representative Bakeberg, follow up?
That's it, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. I just want to tell you, I'm really excited about this. I'm just looking at that demographic piece that was provided by St. Paul, and it's showing that there's like 14% in this program Hispanic, mm-hmm. and 29% Asian, and 26% African American. And I teach in a school in St. Paul, and we are fortunate enough to have a couple pre-K programs. And as a literacy specialist, it has made a difference. There is a study that was done 1990s, and it was called the Early Catastrophe. And so what that pointed out, looking at literacy, it looked at the 30 million word gap that students of a lower socioeconomic group entered the schools with. And so with that in mind, I mean, if you look at like being able to obtain like 2,000 words, I mean, 30 million words, but 2,000 words an hour, there's going to be a gap. And as an elementary school teacher, I've taught reading for 11 years, and lately that's all I'm teaching is just reading. It does make a difference. So I just want to let you know that the kids come, they're socially and emotionally ready to learn. They're also feeling success from being able to do the phonemes or the phonetic aspect. And I thank you for bringing it forward. I'm supporting this bill.
Thank you, Representative Cardi. Representative Grisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Remind me, what's the motion on the table?
Representative Grisha, the motion is to move it to Ways and Means.
So we are moving out of committee. Thank you. A couple questions for Mr. Strom. Mr. Strom, as I look at this, no disagreement that the program itself and working with our earliest learners is super important, but we're a committee looking at how we fund these things and how the technical aspects and how the money flows. As Representative Backberg suggested, we still have some disparities that could be out there. I'm sorry, mispronounced your name again wrong. This guy here. Anyway, Mr. Strom, part of the problem we have here is there could be a lack of funding, like moving dollars from other categoricals. Is there a prohibition? I'll just say it this way. As I've been looking through schools, and you and I have been talking about nutrition balances, I've come across a couple schools that have like $1 million in their school nutrition balances. Those dollars could not be used to backfill or expand these slots. Is that correct?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Grisha, there are a number of reserves on funds and accounts, and the two funds that the legislature basically can't affect are nutrition, because the federal government says that fund has to be separate, and then because of the bonds districts sell, their debt service money has to stay in that account to repay those bonds. In terms of the other funds that school districts have, the legislature has in its purview the ability to designate or not designate money. Sometimes that's called a reserve account. But a school district, the majority of their money that they get for operating purposes is undesignated money in their operating fund. I believe many school districts in St. Paul could comment on this, use a mix of general fund dollars and community education fund dollars to provide their pre-kindergarten program. So it tends to be a mix of those two funds for the VPK and other early education efforts in the districts. The VPK funds are generally in accounts that are reserved, so community ed, basic community ed money, school readiness money, and ECFE money are all in reserved accounts. But the majority of a district's general fund money is unreserved and entirely able to be allocated based on decisions that the school board makes.
Representative Kreisha, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And again, very helpful. And so, Representative Perez-Vega, what I would say on this is no question the intentions and the program is the right thing to do. Once again, we're in a finance committee where I think our biggest challenge, and what I just heard Mr. Strom say that I would confirm from school districts, is they're already trying to figure out creative ways to move money, yet we try to make it more complicated. I wish that, and your bill is not doing that at this point, but I wish that we would give them more flexibility, that we truly allow the dollars to follow the kids with just an on-formula increase, and I think that would be cleaner. At this time, I have no opposition to the bill, and I wish you good luck.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Representative Edelson, final comments. You'll be the last one up.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez-Vega. This is a great bill. I was looking, and Mr. Strom actually answered my question. I wanted you to walk through the sheets, and I think I'm kind of coming to the last one here, but it looks like these seats would expire, and we renewed them in 2019 and 2021, and looking forward to hopefully seeing them pass again. We know that early intervention actually saves us money down the road, so this is a great investment for our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Perez-Vega, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I just want to say I know all of us care about our children in Minnesota. I know that the importance of caring for our children, though, is putting their education first, just hands in hand with their health care. It all is a part of our developmental when it comes to physical and mental health. I'm excited for this bill. I'm excited not just because I'm authorizing, but I'm also excited just as a parent. My daughter is excited to go to preschool, and we're months away from it. She's excited to meet new children. She's excited to not only play on playgrounds, but to interact with teachers and sing the songs and learn her numbers better. She says to me, and this is something that I want to share with you, what she mentioned today, because she knows that mom is carrying a bill called HF456. And she says, I know what comes after 6, 7. And I'm going to learn how to count more in a few months, right, mommy? So, I mean, the expansion of our children is so important. This bill is securing our future leaders. It's securing the champions of education in the state of Minnesota. And it's empowering our children, but not only our children, it's empowering our parents. It's empowering our educators who you heard today. And I want to thank all of our testifiers for making it here in person and those remotely for your dedication, your passion, your struggle, and your strength that has came to fight for permanent funding. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Representative Perez-Vega, and thank you for bringing this bill forward so districts don't have to keep raiding funds together, and this makes stable funding for our districts and those preschool spots. So with that, members, Representative Pryor will renew her motion to, Representative Perez-Vega will renew her motion to send House File 456. Not 7 yet. That might get us in trouble with Representative Pawlowski. So Representative Perez-Vega will renew her motion for House File 456 as amended to move on to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Thank you, Representative Perez-Vega. 456 is on its way to Ways and Means. Next up, we have Representative Hewitt. Welcome to the Education Committee. I should say kind of welcome back to the education realm. We used to serve on education policy together. Representative Hewitt has House File 193 before the committee today. The intention is to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Representative Pryor, would you like to move the bill before the committee?
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Pryor moves House File 193 before the committee. Representative Hewitt, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's definitely an honor to be back in front of such a great committee that I once was a part of, and I learned so much, and it really set forth ideas in my mind of which way to get bills going, and this is one of them. Many of you come from rural Minnesota in this room, and one of our biggest, I don't even want to call it an opportunity, it's a danger, is that we don't have emergency medical services in outstate right now. You're going to hear from an outstate director here shortly, and we are fighting to keep EMTs, the basic level, in the trucks. We have response times in certain areas of Minnesota right now at 90 minutes. And you'll hear more about this in this session as we do other things to try to get that fixed. But this is one little thing that we bumped into. And I think this is really a great bill because what it does is it funds our high school kids to look at or go into EMS. And we take it out of, unfortunately, out of your fund. But it really, this is where we're getting them. I wish they had this program when I was in school. And interesting enough, neither one of these two know each other. But Mr. Anderson's program has benefited Mr. Fisher because Mr. Anderson started a program at Rosemount High School, and those graduates went on to work in Mr. Fisher's territory, which is Morris, Minnesota, which has one of our great colleges that people go from their first years of pre-med. And some of those workers actually worked on his service. So I'm going to let the testifiers talk to you a little bit more, and then I'll close. Madam Chair, Mr. Fisher can go first.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Randy Fisher. I'm a paramedic. I'm an educator. I've been volunteering and working in EMS in Minnesota for the past 46 years. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of HF 193 and share my personal experience and ongoing importance of legislation like this to support EMT education in the high school. I'd much rather be teaching you right now how to use a AED, a defibrillator, or how to perform CPR, or how to provide emergency care in the back of an ambulance at a car crash. But I'm here testifying, which is not my forte, but I will do my best. In 1978, I attended the Spring Lake Park High School Opportunities in Emergency Care Program, OEC program. It was the only high school based EMT program in the nation at the time. Not only were they educating high school seniors as emergency medical technicians, they operated an ambulance based at the high school and provided real experiential education in EMS to the students. The program introduced me to what would be my lifelong career, and also it introduced me to my wife. She was in the program also. After graduating with my EMT certificate, I moved to Morris, Minnesota, where I would obtain my degree at the University of Minnesota campus. I began volunteering with the ambulance service in Morris almost immediately and later became the manager of the ambulance service. We developed a state-approved EMT education program in the community and at the college. In 1995, we partnered with the Morris Area High School to develop and conduct an EMT program in the high school. We were short of personnel. We were trying to figure out ways we could recruit and train and retain EMTs in the field because we had a shortage even back then. Now it's even more critical. The program at the high school is in its 28th year of operation and has trained well over 400 students as EMTs. The pool of EMTs that we create by this high school, college, and community effort is helping us so that we do not have as much of a problem finding EMTs. We're creating our own EMTs by training them within the school. Most of the EMT students that have continued in healthcare careers, in fact, we did a survey and there was 87% retention in healthcare careers when they completed the EMT course in the high school. That's extremely, extremely good. They're going on to become paramedics, nurses, PAs, physicians, and because of the program and the experience that they had at the high school. High school is a time to engage students into service for their communities and to show them opportunities. Healthcare workers are desperately needed, and EMT training is a doorway into a permanent healthcare career. Years ago, I can remember some parents who told me that high school students were too young to be expected, that we expect them to deal with an emergency situation or CPR or using an AED or bleeding or trauma. The fact is, high school students are very capable. They can be taught the skills, they can save lives with their knowledge and their service. Many, after leaving for additional post-secondary education, have returned to Morris and currently serve right now as our hospital director of nursing, our current ambulance service director, our current physician medical director at our ambulance service was a graduate of the EMT program. It's a life skill, and it's a life-saving skill. We are creating generations of EMS personnel by offering EMT training in the high school, and that is one solution to the critical workforce shortage that we are currently experiencing in EMS. Our enrollments are decreasing because of increased instructional hours, cost of supplies and equipment, and lack of funding to support the program. The short-term benefits of funding and training one additional EMT student is that we obtain one EMT to serve on the local ambulance service, which is important. But the long-term benefit is that you might be training a future physician, paramedic, nurse, PA, or ambulance service director that comes back and serves your local community, or maybe another community that's desperately in need of them. My son Josh, who is a paramedic and a graduate of the Morris Area High School EMT program in 1997, came and spoke last year in support of this same legislation. I am here this year to ask again that you not only support the legislation, but pass it and fund it and help ambulance services recruit and train personnel to enter the emergency medical services workforce. The grants offered in this HF 193 bill will help rural and metro schools, EMS, and most importantly, our high school students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I have to say, my oldest daughter actually did the EMT program through U of M Morris. That's the combination program, and she is now a physician. So thank you for the program.
Thank you.
And next up, we have Lee Anderson.
Hello.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm excited. I have an alumni mom on the committee. I won't say who she is. I am also a product of a high school program. Mine was a healthcare careers program. Since then, I've been an EMT for 40 years, just retired as a firefighter of 30 years, and have been an EMS instructor, both college and high school, for over 25. And I'm not here to represent an association or an organization, but to ask as a teacher in a high school program to please support this bill, because we're asked all the time, do you have anybody who's interested, who can work, or who we want to mentor? And that's all over the state. And the best way I can illustrate this is a little story. Two of last year's graduates, Maggie and Josh, graduated from my program. They were both interested in going into law enforcement. And part of the law enforcement program is they need emergency medical responder. It's a level for firefighters and police officers. They took that class, and they thought that was pretty fun. And they not only got high school credits, but they also got articulated credits for the colleges. So they didn't have to take that class when they went to college. Both applied at Northern Minnesota College in Ely and their law enforcement program. And also while in my class, they caught the EMS bug. And they said, you know what, let's take that EMT part too, the ambulance part. And they were just really digging that. And 5 weeks before they graduated high school, Josh dared Maggie to apply for an EMS job with the Ely Area Ambulance Service. And both were hired about 2 weeks after they graduated high school. Filled two gaps in northern Minnesota, far away from the cities. But this is happening in Stearns County, it's happening in Mankato, and it's happening all over the Twin Cities and the suburbs. Presently, there are 21 high school programs that are awarding CTE credits and also articulated credits throughout most of the state, and many of those many schools outside of Minnesota are taking Minnesota's articulated credits, which is amazing. Keep that going. We lost three programs last year, and I think I have a feeling, I have a pretty good idea why. Most of the people in Minnesota are, if they get hurt, if they're hurt or they need medical aid, are being seen by basic providers, the emergency medical responder and the emergency medical technician level. And that's kind of what our high school programs are taking care of. 80% of rural Minnesota rely on volunteers. So they're not making lots of money. We're here to create interest and fill those spaces, not to pay for them, not to pay for their money and their fund, their award, their pay, but to get them interested, and this is happening in the high schools. My wife's aunt and uncle are pretty concerned. They live in Minnesota Lake. They've been on the volunteer ambulance for 25 years, and they don't know who's going to replace them. Nobody seems to be interested. But here's where the high school programs come in. We have many of our students in high school. They'll take the EMR class. They'll take the EMT class. Some don't always go into it. Some realize it's kind of icky right now. I don't want to do that. I want to go pee. I want to go be a plumber. I'm going to go be the HVAC guy. But you know what? When they get settled in Elko or Elbow Lake and they do that job, fire department is needing people. The local ambulance is needing people. And those are the people who go back and are part of that response area now. Even though they're members of the community, they're supporting the entire state of Minnesota. So this doesn't just stay within that school district's area. I guess what I'm saying is I retired last November, and 2 weeks before I retired, I'm in the back seat of a crash, hanging onto somebody's head who is not doing so well. And I was on the Rosemont Fire Department, and Hastings showed up, and Randolph showed up, and MISO showed up, and I had three people from different agencies say, "How you doing, Mr. A?" They were alumni, and it's nice to see that, and I think we're going to have this huge impact. They may not go into it right away out of high school, but they're going to get settled, become parts of their community, and then start filling those roles. So this is a long term. The reason we need the funds right now, one of the reasons is the FDA threw a twist in us and decertified a lot of our equipment. And these programs can't afford a $9,500 defibrillator, so we have to get new ones. That's 3 years of my budget. And they don't take installments. So this money is going to help support and build more programs. There's lots of people who want to teach. The old guys with bad knees, that's our job. So.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the personal stories and just all the work that you're doing to make sure we have students that are ready to jump into these very important jobs. With that, members, we had nobody sign up for public testimony, I believe, but we have questions. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I just want to thank you for bringing this forward. This is a very important bill, and I do hope everyone supports this. Coming from rural Minnesota, this is a huge problem. I have had EMS from both Red Wing and Wabasha come and visit me in my office and talk about the dire need that we are in the rural area with our responders, and specifically when you said about the time that it's taking for people to respond to something that happened. Just to give you a little story, 3 years ago, we were at a wrestling match, and one of the wrestlers very badly dislocated his elbow to the point where it was completely distorted on the mat. We waited. They could not move him because of the situation. We waited over an hour for an ambulance to come to that school. So it was very difficult to watch that child that was in such extreme pain. But think about that. that was not a life, you know, threatening injury. And imagine if that was someone that had a heart attack. Imagine if that was someone else. So this is very important. And anywhere that we can put our money, because right now we have so many, we have so many students that are going to college that are not necessarily getting jobs. We need to promote, we need to promote anything like this that's going to get them out there, get them active, and have a good paying job. So this is 100% where we should be putting our tax dollars. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for Mr. Anderson. You alluded to some programs that weren't continuing, and you had a good idea why, but I'm wondering if you could elucidate on that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, I think it is costs. They're pretty expensive to keep going, to start, to get the equipment. Once you have the equipment, it's great, but the FDA thing really hit us hard. It's not that we can't use an old monitor, but they don't make parts anymore. So once that borrowed or discontinued machine doesn't work anymore, we can't get parts. And so it's hard to keep those. Once the teacher goes away, it's hard to get a replacement. Most of them are being hired as community experts in terms of teaching licensure.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I made the connection. So my son took his class over 15 years ago. So, but I know that he loved it. He didn't go into the field, but he loved that course. So thank you. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
Can you pay you in a boat?
Thank you so much. It's fun to find those connections. We say that when we're working with kiddos, we say connection.
Yeah.
So with that, I don't see any further questions. Representative Hewitt, would you like a final word?
Madam Chair, thank you so much for hearing this bill today. This is the first step to many things you'll hear this year about this subject. This is just one little piece, and I'm glad you brought up your story, Representative, and I'm not going to hash your last name because they do it to me all the time. But I really respect what you're saying, and those are stories we're hearing all around the state. And Mr. Anderson was right about most of his stuff, except for there's another aspect to this, and we're probably going to have to look at funding the other aspect of EMS too, but those are later discussions for other committees. And I was just asking Mr. Fisher here, number one, his son followed in his footsteps, but number two, I asked him what he pays his EMTs, and to start around $15 an hour, that's a pretty good wage for college in a small town. And so we see wages up in the $25 to $30 an hour wage in the cities. So just coming right out of high school, and that wage is a pretty good wage. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for the bill. And with that, Representative Pryor renews her motion to lay over House File 193 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Frazier, who's been patiently waiting for his bill. And that is House File 535. The chair's intention is to hear this bill and send it over to the Elections Committee, who needs to have some discussions around it. So, Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 535 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Elections?
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Clardy. So we now have House File 535 before us. We have another Morris undergrad that was saying hello. Connections. Representative Frazier, would you like to, your bill's before us, would you like to present your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and lead. Pleasure to be here. And it was a pleasure to wait, getting to hear folks talk about Morris. I don't always get to hear that, but there are a lot of us Morris alumni around. House File 535, essentially what it does, by current law now, school districts are allowed to go out for a referendum to go above what their statutory limits are for their levies. However, it has to be put to a vote. Voters have to approve that. It can only go for a maximum of 10 years. Then after that 10 years, they would have to go back out to those voters. Now, the problem with that is in those situations, there can be some uncertainty around whether or not that levy is going to be approved again, and school districts have to make their budget. So oftentimes, they're facing a cliff of uncertainty because they're not sure if that levy will be approved again. This bill will allow for school districts to approve that levy on their own by vote. It would require the school district to have a public hearing to get feedback from voters and community members. It can only be approved up to what the original time frame was for the original referendum and also for that same amount. It would allow for increases based on inflation. Essentially, this bill would give school districts the ability to plan appropriately by having more certainty around their budgets, therefore avoiding those cliffs and those uncertainties that could lead to costly layoffs. With that, I do believe we have a couple of, I see them over there, we have a couple of testifiers. I will yield for testimony.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. We have John Bento, school board member, and will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Yoakum. Members of the Education Committee, my name is John Vento. I'm a school board director for the Robbinsdale Area Schools. As a school board member for the past 10 years, I want to thank Representative Frazier for introducing this bill. It is a really important piece of legislation to school boards across the state of Minnesota. With House File 535, school boards are not asking to have an increase in levy authority, only to renew operating levies that are already approved by our voters. Robbinsdale Area Schools currently has two operating levies, one that passed in 2014 and another in 2018, with well over 60% of the voters' support. We are dependent on our two levies. They provide vital services to our students, such as maintaining lower average class sizes, diverse course offerings, co-curricular activities, and the investment in our professional development around the science of reading for our peak K and 5 staff. In 2014, we estimated the levy renewal was the equivalent of staffing for five of our elementary schools. These are daily operating costs, not luxuries. Permitting school boards to renew referendums at the same level after a public hearing would save thousands of taxpayer dollars that school districts are required to spend informing the public and conducting the election again at no additional cost to the state. Robbinsdale Area Schools paid over $100,000 in costs running the campaign, including printing and personnel costs in the 2018 for this campaign. Our community supported our efforts by raising over $20,000 for a citizen committee, along with countless volunteer hours. Anytime we ask our communities for support for any levy, these campaigns cost our district and communities the same amount. School boards are elected by the same voters who vote for legislators, city council, county boards, town boards, etc. Why are school districts the only governmental body that has to pass a referendum for operating costs? In our last referendum, we had the overwhelming support of our seven communities, city councils, and mayors. When speaking with these city representatives, I've always asked, how would they feel if they had to go to voters asking for an increase in funding annually? We are elected to represent our communities on the same ballot. Why are school board members receiving a lesser value or second class? I'm unaware of any other elected body that has these limitations put on them over the same time. Finally, the public supports this. According to multiple Morris Leatherman surveys over the past several years, they have consistently shown a strong majority of Minnesotans support allowing locally elected boards to renew an existing school referendum, including a majority of Republicans, Democrats, expressing support. To further support this, since 2014, 132 of 133 levies have passed, 99.3%, often with overwhelming majorities. House File 535 is a sensible, responsible step to help school districts provide stability to our budget process and to return local control to school board members to renew voter-approved levies. Thank you.
Thank you, School Board Member Vento. With that, we also had public testimony. Someone sign up. We have Jeff Alstad, Superintendent for Owatonna Schools, testifying remotely. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jeff Alstead, proud superintendent for the Owatonna Public School District. I am representing, again, Greater Minnesota today on this topic. I appreciate Representative Frazier bringing this forward. This topic has been discussed in many of the previous legislative sessions. In fact, one of the senators that serves my area, Senator John Chasinski, has been a strong supporter of this particular item to allow local school boards to renew local operating levy referenda. As Mr. Vento indicated, this has found strong support amongst our communities. In fact, there have been 133 operating levy renewals that elections that were run, 132 out of the 133 passed. So it's obvious that communities are seeing the value in these dollars that are spent. I would also add that from a local perspective, in Owatonna, the last operating levy we ran was in 2020, which coincides with our even year elections. But within that, we spent $72,000 on this ballot. Furthermore, I have over 600 hours. In fact, I personally did over 80 public presentations on this topic just to renew our levy. It is my belief that certainly school admin and some of our staff that were helping to do that could certainly dedicate their time to more important items like reading and writing and math, all of the topics that I know that have strong accountability standards that we want to live up to. Lastly, I would like to add that these are locally elected officials. And again, Mr. Vento indicated very clearly that as a publicly elected official and school board member, why are we the only entity that is asked to do this on an ongoing basis? We are on the same ballot as our city and county colleagues and their colleagues, I should say, for this purpose. I often wonder why when we've been asked to do this, that we're asking, and the only time perhaps our citizens would have the opportunity to say no would be on behalf of our students, which I think should be the most protected group that we're working with. So again, I'm in strong support of House File 535, and from a superintendent administrative perspective, we would much rather be spending our time working in classrooms and with our administrators on improving our systems versus spending time trying to pass an operating levy that, as we've indicated many times, are successful. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Superintendent Nelsted. Members, any questions on this bill? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I can't tell you how much my district support this. And I think all the points that were made are really good, that school board members are locally elected, that when they have these discussions, those are public meetings. I have worked on renewing operating or levies in our community, and it's exhausting, the amount of time. It's also subject to so much politics that it becomes very, very challenging. So if you think about $100,000 or $70,000, I think it's a waste of money, quite frankly. And so I just really am supportive and very hope to see pass this year.
Thank you. Any Representative Krishna, I think, is the last one on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the motion is to move this to state gov?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Elections, actually.
Or elections, thank you. So thank you to the testifiers and to Mr. Vento and Mr. Elstead. Thank you, Representative Frazier. There's lots of things in this committee that I'll let quietly go by or I'll watch, but this is not one of them. This is a terrible idea, Representative Frazier, and let me tell you why. Just because democracy is hard doesn't mean we should take pieces out of that. And to the testifier, I hear there's overwhelming support for these and all that. Well, great, then keep doing them. They'll keep passing. But the fact of the matter is our voters do have a choice, and we've had lots of conversations about elections. I'm on the side that I believe there's an election integrity, and I believe that that communication between the voters and the school is very important in improving our communities. And so that's one reason that I would not support this bill. The second, and there's a couple of other things, we throw things out anecdotally that I don't think are actually based in fact. Mr. Strom, if all the levies were automatically renewed, would that increase the state aid equalization? Would that be a cost to the state or no cost? We have no fiscal note, but if these were automatically renewed, is there a state component?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, Ms. Beckel can speak to the fiscal note process for this year. In past years, there have been fiscal notes. In 2017, I believe the note did show an aid in levy cost under the assumptions at that time. In subsequent years, because of the passage rate, the fiscal notes showed no aid or levy cost because the assumption was made that the referendum would be renewed regardless. Ms. Beckel may want to speak about the fiscal note process this year and where that's at.
And thank you.
Representative Krishna, can we let Ms. Beckel answer, then we'll go to your next question?
I can't. I can actually help her. I'm not really worried about having a fiscal note. I just want to know if they were all automatically renewed, there could be equalization costs.
Ms. Beckel, Mr. Strong?
Madam Chair, Representative Parisha, the way that would be measured would be against what the alternative would be. And if the fiscal note says that those would pass anyway, then there would be zero cost.
Okay.
So it's sort of a question. It's sort of a, like measuring against base, I guess.
Representative Parisha, can I go to Ms. Beckel now?
You sure can, Ms. Beck.
Ms. Sobe?
Yep.
Ms. Beckel?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. Which question specifically would you like me to speak to?
Well, Representative Krisha, did you get your question answered from Mr.
I did. Strong? I can circle back.
Okay, thank you. Next question you have?
Yep, so thank you. So more, my point is that there was a comment made that there's no state cost. There is a state cost, or there could be one if all these are automatically removed. The second thing is, and in the areas that I represent, I hear this all the time. School districts are the only ones that don't have to go to the voters. Well, if you look at how much aid school districts get from the state versus LGA and other ones, there's the reason. And I don't think we want to go down the path of changing that formula so that we can automatically renew these. Mr. Vento, in your efforts, I am sure you would not want to be funded at the level that your other local governments are, because that would be a very dangerous position to be in. The reason school districts have what they have is there is a communication with the voters. School board members, we're all elected here. We go to the voters and we communicate to them on what we're about to do. Removing that process, and I'm sorry, I'll be very candid and blunt. Every argument I hear for doing this is it's hard. Democracy's hard. Door knocking is hard. Getting your ideas is hard. Getting the school district to work with the community to have the very best programs, whether they're EMS programs or vocational, is hard. But so what? That's what we do. And I'm sorry, I just good luck with your bill. The majority party has the votes. You're going to see this go through. But I will tell you, if we believe in elections, if we believe in integrity, and if we believe those conversations bring us to a better point, Mr. Vento, I'm sure you ran for the school board to improve your school and to have those conversations, then let's keep doing those. Let's let elections be the megaphone of progress versus the silence that we're shooting for. So I'm sorry, I can't support your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Representative Krish. I don't think I heard a question there, but I'm going to go to the author, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that diatribe, Representative Krish. If I can just get some clarity on the record, I thought I heard Mr. Strom say there will not be a cost if the assumption is all these will be renewed. Is that correct?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Frazier, yes, if that's the assumption that MDE and the fiscal note process determine, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom. I hope that clarifies things to you, Representative Prishaw. So let me just speak to this hard thing. I do think democracy is hard. We're not trying to change the fact that democracy is hard. I don't know if this would make democracy any easier. We do have a requirement that the school board would have to have a hearing and allow for community input. And if the community doesn't like it, if the school board decides to go opposite of what the community wants, through elections, they can remove those school board members. So we're not removing what elections actually do, and that is hold the individual that's elected accountable to what the community wants. Essentially what this does, it provides an avenue for school boards to have the ability to know what to expect next, not to have to deal with the uncertainty of a cliff after the period of time comes to an end for the original renewal. I think this makes sense. I think it resolves an issue that's been around for a very long time. School districts struggle. Mr. Vento just described how this referendum funds five schools.
Right now, it would be roughly.
Mr. Vento, can you state your name for the record? Yeah.
Again, John Vento, Robbinsdale Schools. Back in 2014, so it's a little dated information, but I mean, we have two levies right now. One is 24 and the other is about 6 million. So 24 million out of the budget, we're talking between 15 and 20% of our budget if it failed. And I can speak to what a failure looks like because in 2007, Robbinsdale had a operating levy fail. And the cuts were drastic. And we've never brought back, we had to cut arts out of our schools. And I knew this as a parent, not as a board member. This is one of the reasons I'm actually sitting in this chair today is because of that failed referendum. We lost arts in our classrooms. It took 7 to 8 years to bring it back from those cuts of one failed referendum, even though in 2008 we approved it again, and then in 14, and now we're up due for that same referendum in 24.
And I understand, I hear you loud and clear about democracy. I'm not going to give a history lesson here about my own experience and my family's experience around democracy. I put my name on a ballot. I'm out for vote every 4 years. I ran two referendum campaigns. I'm still sitting as the current treasurer, gearing up for a campaign in 24 because of the uncertainty. If we can get some certainty around it on the budgets, great. If you don't approve it, great. Then we get to go out hat in hand to the voters, just like we're hat in hand down here today for VPK money, like we were in hat in hand years ago for compensatory. So we can either have stable funding for schools, or we can keep guessing. Because that's all it is, and it's fiscal cliff after fiscal cliff after fiscal cliff. This is just one of them. VPK, we lose 300 seats if it doesn't pass this year in Robbinsdale. You don't add on the formula, we go 0 and 0. I remember those days, 1 and 1, 0 and 0. You're trying to build budgets on that staff our buildings adequately to service our communities. Everything we do is a fiscal cliff. I've heard, and I believe, the reason one of the referendums failed, otherwise we'd be at 100%, was because people were mad about if they thought all the ESSER money would cover those expenses. Fiscal cliff, September of 2023. Fiscal cliff, September of 2024. All those money goes away. And we're not using it in Robbinsdale for permanent positions, but I'm having to work with the administration because we are providing additional services that are needed. So, yes, maybe there's the trifecta of government. Maybe all this funding and tying everything to inflation is going to come true. I'll wait and see what the February forecast says first before I make an opinion of what we're going to be capable of doing as we move forward. This is a sensible move. It gives local control back to locally elected officials. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, School Board Member Vento, and thank you for your ongoing family's commitment to the state of Minnesota. Representative Frazier.
Mr. Chair, I think that was an appropriate close. Members, support this.
Thank you. With that, members, I'm going to renew the motion of Representative Clardy to move this bill on to elections. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 House File 535 is adopted. It's moving on to elections. And with that, members, I just want to make sure I said the right bill number. With that, members, wanted to give a few announcements. We'll be posting the committees that we're going to, the bills that we're going to be hearing for committee next week. Toward the end of the day today. But there is something I want to make sure we give a heads up that we've had discussions with. Minority lead and members and the author of the bill. We're hearing a bill up Tuesday night, and because of the turnaround, we want to make sure people have time to look at it and for amendments. So the amendment deadline for House File 20 that we're hearing Tuesday evening on February 7th will be at 9 a.m. that morning. So there'll be a 9 a.m. amendment deadline for House File 20 on Tuesday, February 7th. The other deadlines for the bills that we're hearing that day are our regular deadline. So. Oh, Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, what time on Tuesday do you think we'll be having committee? Just waking up.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. We'll be having our regular committee time during the day and then 7 o'clock Tuesday evening. With that, members, we are adjourned.